Shalom everyone. Today we are discussing Parashot to Parashot, Tazria Metzora, and the issue is something that bothers most people most of the time, which is the key for success. How do you create success? And it bothers people because it's not that easy. We can see it many cases along history. First of all, the problem with success is how do you define success? This is A. Two is what do you have to do in order to achieve success? So one issue is, you know, success is about thinking positive. There's a lot of stuff that's going around, but a lot of people do think positive and it's not happening positive in their lives. So what is the definition of success? What does it mean, say, success? So about this issue, about the definition of success, we discussed last week, which means success does not mean that you have a temporary gain materialistically for just a short time. Success is the ability of a person to achieve a connection to true fulfillment over a long time. And that can happen only when we get out of the box, when we get to the eighth direction, which means the supernatural, the metaphysical, the spiritual, the soul level connection. Unless we do that connection, we will never have success. So the spiritual aspect of success, we discussed it last week. We discussed it many times, and we're going to continue to discuss it in this parasha too. There's another issue. Most people understand that if you want to achieve success, is hard work. And now there are two layers of hard work. One is hard work physically, and we know a lot of people that are very, very hardworking people. They're not necessarily successful. A lot of people invest a lot of hard work in achieving what do they think is success. And it says, you know, no pain, no gain. A lot of people have a lot of pain and still they don't have any gain. A lot of people invest so much time and effort in achieving success, and it doesn't mean that they achieve it. A lot of people are very hardworking people all their lives, and they don't have long moments of experiencing success. So how do you explain that? And what about, oh, religion? What if you really work hard on the religious aspect? And then comes Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Arizal, and he says, you could see a lot of people working very hard on their religious values, observance, and efforts so much, and they don't see any bliss in their efforts. So what's wrong? Like, where is the mistake being done? Assuming that there is a formula, assuming that success is not something that is random, like a lot of people do believe that success is what we call if you're lucky or you're not lucky. Some people are lucky, that's why they're successful. Some people are not lucky and they're not successful, and which means there's nothing to do with you. Why? Based on what we just said before, people see, observe that, you know, a lot of people are making a lot of effort in order to achieve success. Some of them achieve degrees, they achieve experience, they have the right connections, they have the right circles of support of family, friends, community, whatever, and they still don't experience lasting success. I'm not talking about those moments in a person's life that person feels successful for a short time. This is not a definition of success. If you feel successful a few hours, few days, a few weeks, and then it disappears, that was never a success. Success is something that you can keep. It's a feeling that you can keep and you can build on top of it, which means it's not just that you don't lose it, you expand it over time. This is success. So, how do we achieve success? So, if we read Parashat Tzria, and we ask the question from the text itself, how did I get to that idea of success? It starts in the book of Leviticus, chapter 12, verse 1. Vayeder Adonai Moshe Lemor, like usually, and God spoke to Moses, saying, Daber el bnei Israel Lemor, speak to the children of Israel, telling, Isha ki tazriya, a woman, when she is inseminating, and nobody really understand what does that mean, because it's a man that gives semen and not a woman. Ve'yalda zachar, and then she gave birth to a babe, to a male, she'll be unclean for 7 days. And then on the eighth day, it's time to circumcise his foreskin. That's verse number 3 in chapter 12, Leviticus. On the eighth day. So we have another time, the eighth day. Last week's parasha started on the eighth day. Now, this week's parasha, the topic is on the eighth day, circumcision. And of course, there is a similar background, which means if you want to achieve success, you need to connect to the eighth direction. Now, scientists who research the human brain will explain to us that the human brain, for a human being to have a healthy feeling of reality, your brain is constantly checking the whereabouts of the body, which means where is my right, where is my left, where is my forward, where is my backwards, where is the top, where is the bottom, and where am I in that intricate system of reality. Okay, for a person to catch the eighth direction, you have to let go of the seven. And to catch the eighth direction, which it's very hard, because that means you let go of your sense of reality. And basically, it's a warning. If you can achieve that loss of reality through a drug or any kind of system that will get you knocked out, and then you can connect to the world outside the box. If you're not trained enough beforehand, that's very dangerous. Why? You have no idea what's happening on the eighth direction, the direction outside the box. You've never been there. You don't have, it's like, can you imagine yourself being thrown into a virtual reality in which you had never experienced that app? So you have no sense of direction, no sense of rules and reality, simply because our brains, for most human beings in our reality, in our society, materialistic society, we're never trained how to deal with outside the box. We're never trained how to live or exist outside the box, because the sense of direction we have within the box is totally different. And basically, you, in order to get out of the box, and that's why we, in many descriptions of people that experience the realm, that you can send your consciousness, awareness through walls, through distances, and be in many places at the same time. You know, all that stuff that is called supernatural, metaphysical, and stuff like this. If you don't have the training to act, to simply have control over that, don't go there. It's very dangerous. You don't know what to do. Okay? You need to have a spiritual preparation in order to be able to direct yourself. However, people who go and experience the supernatural, one major thing that people testify, and modern science can testify in the last 25 years, is that part of the brain that is responsible to check all the time. Where is my right? Where is my left? Where is my forward and the backwards and, you know, all seven directions? That has to be shut down. And when it's shut down, it looks like an epileptic seizure. It's not, but it looks like it. Because people who go through epileptic seizure, many, many philosophers said lately, yes, scientists say it's epileptic seizure. Show me people that during epileptic seizure wrote something like the book of Isaiah or like the five books of Moses. Can't. So it's not that simple. However, this is not being taught in our educational system, not the secular and not the religious in most places on this planet. So, in order to connect to the eighth day, the eighth direction outside the box, and as we said before, you need to do a lot of hard spiritual work, and this is a prerequisite for real lasting success. It's a very important basic rule, but it is not enough. So, what do you need to do? So, the hint we have is about circumcision. This is not the first time circumcision is being mentioned in the Torah. We mention it in Parashat Lech Lecha when Abraham is the first one to do Brit Milah. Maybe he was not the first one to cut his foreskin. I have no idea. Could be. Probably people tried everything. But to do a Brit Milah is the Hebrew term for circumcision. It does not mean circumcision. Brit means a covenant. Milah means circumcision, but it means also the word. A word. The word, which means having, you know, covenant of the word, it's much more making sense than covenant of the foreskin, of removing the foreskin. Because there is something about the commitment, the covenant in Brit Milah, and that's the original term. So, which means that on the eighth day after the birth of a male boy, there is some opening because it took his soul, nefesh, 7 days to settle in the body. You know, a little baby, they're not really here. It takes them a while to get into like what's right and what's left, what's forward, what's backwards. They're not really there. They're not really focused, most of them. But on the eighth day, you can connect them to the realm of the world beyond. Okay, after that story of the big birth of a child, what we have within that story, another thing. What we asked before, what does it mean that a woman will tazria, inseminate, which is the closest way to translate the word itself? And we know that women do not give semen. It's a man who does it. So what does it mean? No one, you know, if you read all the commentators, a lot of arguments about it. Doesn't seem to be that somebody gives a real explanation till we go to the Zohar. And what is the Zohar teaching us? One of the most important things in our life. And that's the second thing. What we said, if you want to succeed, to achieve a real, true, lasting sense of success in your life, you need to have or to work on your connection to the supernatural dimension. Why? Because fulfillment does not come from the physical dimension. As a proof, we know that in the physical dimension, the rule applies to what is more is less. Food that you, let's say you define success by the ability to acquire really high quality food, which means, let's say, either buying the high quality food in certain places or getting in a very high qualified food institutions like Michelin restaurants. Okay? The more you eat, the less you enjoy. And then the joy, the pleasure that you experience at the beginning of the procedure of eating is not lasting, because the more you simply push down your throat the food, the less is the experience of pleasure, till if you overeat, it can turn into a feeling of disgust and nausea. This is exactly the definition of what is more is less. This is exactly the definition of elusive pleasure. If you cannot hold on to the pleasure for longer than a few minutes, maybe an hour or maybe a little bit more, you can't hold on to it. This is elusive pleasure. It's not real. And it's leaving you with a bad taste that I spent so much money, so much time to get into that pleasure. How long did that pleasure last? Not too long. Which means I am striving in the wrong direction. However, when I am working really hard on my supernatural connection through meditation, developing my brain to have fulfillment, not through, I like to have a dopamine a surge that is very short-lived, but to be able to expand the pleasure to a very long period daily. I'm not saying 24/7, but instead, when you look backwards, 24 hours, from the moment you woke up and then you go to sleep, and you say, how long of my hours of being awakened, how long of it was pleasurable, and how long of it was, let's say, we can live by it. And how long of it, what's the portion that it was painful? Oh, sometimes overwhelmingly painful. And you ask the question. And if you get the number that the highest percentage is about nothingness or maybe pain, you're not succeeding. If the numbers do not improve, okay? Modern research, if you delve into the science that is called neurotheology, I repeat, mention it again and again, because it's not just a belief system. There's already a scientific measurement. When you train yourself through meditation, through spiritual study, through making an effort in developing our spiritual mind, you can see You can see it through CT or other brain tests that your brain is changing the amount of pain that you suffer is shrinking, the amount of pleasure is expanding, and also the times that they share their control over your brain, which means over here you can see results. Okay? And more scientific experiments show that. So why doesn't the government invest so much money in training little kids in school to meditate? And the answer is, who is going to make money of it? The more spiritual people become, the less addictive they are, which means they shop less, which means they feed the big superpowers, which means the big companies of fashion, food, whatever you name it, that they live over our dopamine addictions, okay, for short-lived surge of excitement and fulfillment. They live on that. And they finance the political system. Why would they support something like this? Okay. The more bored the children are, the more they go into the internet and get addicted to all kinds of stuff they find on the social networks. And then they buy. And they nudge their parents, you know, I need this kind of stuff that I saw. Everybody is using, wearing, whatever. And that means spending money, and the government is taking the taxes. Why would people who run our society have any interest to develop the spiritual well-being of their societies? No interest whatsoever. So you have to take care of it yourself because nobody else is going to do it for you. And so we are talking about the spiritual realm, the spiritual supernatural connection that we are all capable of. We all need that to be developed so we can bring down the noise that we experience all the time that is based on very, very low frequency emotions. That it's based in what we call the what is being called the primitive brain, that brain that we share with a lot of animals, with the mammals, with birds, maybe even with fish. Okay? And they don't need a lot of brain in order to maintain life. You know, a lot of fish, for instance, they marry for life. Okay? They live in couples. Their territorials, their very loyal family. They grow their family in with a lot of loyalty, and they're fish. And those fish, if you eat those fish, you see that the brain is not bigger than a pea. So the hardware to maintain marriage life, a home, and a family, the hardware is not bigger than a pea. Can have a very nice, successful life with that. So, what do you need the rest of the brain for? Yeah. If you don't use it, you lose it. And becomes no man's land. Oh, yeah. All kinds of other stuff takes over because when there is a vacuum, only troubles move in. And basically, you don't know who's ruling those parts of your brain. So, let's continue. The parasha then continues. After the woman giving birth, and what happens with that woman, and how she's she becoming impure. Well, I don't want to go into that. The question was about the insemination, and which is coming from the root zera. Zera means semen. It means also seed, and that can be read also the seed of the future. Okay. After that, We're going back to that seed issue. We're talking about the book of Leviticus, chapter 13, verse 1. And here is a long story about something that is called leprosy, tzara'at. Okay. However, you read about leprosy, whoever is in the medical science realizes after a few verses that we're not talking about the medical leprosy that is known to modern science. We're talking about something totally else. Who will take care of the leprosy? Not the physician, although the physician has a very respectable place in the Torah. Okay? Even the Ibn Ezra, one of the greatest commentators of the five books of Moses, he says on his commentary on the book of on the Parshat Mishpatim, Verapo Yerapeh, that if somebody hurt somebody physically, he has to pay him to compensate him by paying for his the days that he was not able to work and for the medical treatment. And the Ibn Ezra says that means that over here, the Torah is giving a permission for the physician to heal. However, he says, the physician can heal only what's on the outside of the body. But to heal what's inside the body, only the Creator himself can heal. But here, if the Torah says that the physician can heal a wound, over here, the Torah is not taking the physician into the picture because leprosy is not a physical disease. And how do we know? It says clearly, chapter 13 in Leviticus, verse 1, and God speaks to Moses and Aaron, saying, verse 2, Adam ki yeh be'or besaro se'et o sapachat o baheret v'ya be'or besaro le'neged tzara. When a person has that lesion that is called tzara'at, Vehuva el Aaron HaKohen, and they should bring him to Aaron the high priest, or el achad mi banav HaKohanim, or to one of his descendants, the Kohanim. Now, Aaron's healing was never physical. Aaron's healing was spiritual. He would bring peace to people, he would bless people, and he would inject, and that's the most important thing. He would inject chesed in places people could not generate that chesed, loving kindness, on their own. But first of all, it says, verse 3, Vera kohenet anega beor basar, and here it explains how the Kohen basically identifies the tzara'at, the so-called leprosy, and declares it impure. And then there's a whole long, very hard to understand description of how the Kohen is again and again healing the leprosy. First of all, there's a quarantine time. And then the Kohen has to help the person to purify. Okay? And the commentaries are saying, why does it say Vehuvah HaKohen should be brought to the Kohen? Because leprosy is a mental disease that affects the supernatural connection of the person. And only the Kohen can declare that as a supernatural disease. Tzara'at, the commentators are saying, when you translate tzara'at into Aramaic, it's called sagiru. Sagiru, if you look in Semitic languages, that Hebrew and Aramaic are Semitic language, sagiru is coming from the shoresh samer gimel reish, which means closed, locked up. Okay, blocked. What is the leprosy about? A person, because of his actions, what are the actions we're going to speak about? He creates a blockage in the flow of the life essence into his body and soul. The result will be tzaraat, sagiur. The person is blocked, and therefore his disease is the blockage. How do you heal? You have to unlock the blockage. How did he come to that place? So the Zohar of Parashat Ki Tetzeh explains it to us, and explains it that basically the tzara'at is coming from the word that's been explained many other places, motzira, which means the person is kind of not necessarily physically bad mouthing, but could be mentally bad mouthing everything. Which means, why would somebody have tzara'at? Why would somebody have that sagir blockage? And therefore, that blockage will manifest itself into something that the Kohen, either Aaron the high priest or his descendant, will be able to realize, could be from other descriptions, that only the Kohen could see the tzara'at. Only the Kohen could see the blockage on the over the person's, let's say, meridians of energy flow in his ethereal spiritual body. We have a physical body. We have also an ethereal body that the physical eye mostly cannot see. Some people have the abilities to see that. You can train yourself to do that. Basically, if you want to know the tip how to train, first of all, you start sitting in a dark room, you light a candle, and then you try to look at the aura that is outside the candle. If you train for a long enough time, you might see that there around the flame itself, there are layers and layers of la and layers of auras in different colors. And after you get yourself used to see that, you will see that people have the same aura. Some people have a stronger aura, some people have a lesser aura, some people's auras are in a yellow, green, red, purple, blue, all kinds, like the auras over the flame of the candle. Now, some people have holes in that aura, and usually these holes are basically a result of leprosy. Okay. And basically, what the Maggid of Mezritch, which was a main student of the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement, used to say, when you see a small hole in a physical body, that shows as a bigger hole in the spiritual body, in the soul. So where is the leprosy coming from? And the Zohar Parashat Ki Tetzeh explains it's coming from the place that the person is bad-mouthing other people. And the worst is and is bad-mouthing the creation. And it's not two different things. The moment I am bad-mouthing a person, especially when I feel that that person is responsible for a lot of pain in my life. When I do that, I'm saying there's no commander to the castle, which means there's no one running reality. And things do not happen by fair rules. And it was not fair that I was hurt by somebody. But if we really have faith that nothing happens for no reason, so I know that if the Creator Almighty allowed somebody to hurt me verbally, physically, financially, whatever, There was a permission from above. And why was there a permission from above? There's a lesson I have to go through. And without that lesson, my soul is not complete. So I have two ways of looking at what happens to me. And what we can see that, again, let's go to, it's very hard to accept. It's very hard to accept, I can't complain if somebody hurt me. I can't be upset about it. I'm a human being. I can't be angry. I cannot protest. And the answer is yes and no. You should put boundaries and stuff like this. You should really, but you have to understand if another person hurt me, it's because the Creator allowed him to do that. And why did it allow him to do that to me? There's a lesson I have to take. I have to look within, see the reaction of my subconscious mind. And from that reaction, I would know where is the hurt, where is the hole that the Maggid of Mezrich was talking about. The hole in my soul. So when I hurt, do people react the same way when they're being hurt? No. Some people go into feeling miserable and feeling like victims, and they complain and hate the whole universe and so on. Some people are becoming very angry and violent, and they attack and they hurt. Because they need revenge and are physically into taking revenge. And without a revenge, you cannot feel quiet. Okay? People react different ways. Why? Because the reason why somebody else hurt me is inside myself. When I really stop the noise, stop the mess. In myself, in my heart, and my brain, and ask myself, pull yourself out of the box. Look at your emotional reaction. You look at your mental reaction. Analyze it. Ask yourself, should the complete, spiritual, powerful human being react this way? Which means the question is not if you're right or wrong. We're not here to be right. There's no mitzvah anywhere to be right. Oh, there's a mitzvah not to take revenge, not to be angry, not to hate, whatever. Why? This is a felony, which means the moment I hate, I am hurting. We spoke about it before. I'm hurting myself more than anyone else. And the famous saying, when I hate somebody, it's like drinking poison, expecting somebody else to die. First of all, when I hate somebody, when I'm angry about somebody, I'm hurting my own self, spiritually and later on physically. And we know that it's a scientific, proven issue. No debate about it anymore. Okay? So when I am basically, very upset about something that happened to me and was not very comfortable. I am, according to the Zohar, bad-mouthing the creation and the creator. Because if I'm angry, I'm saying that's not fair. What does it mean? I'm not supposed to get that. Maybe somebody else should get it. That was a mistake. No mistakes. If this is what happened to me, this is what I have to deal with. And my job in life, if I take the spiritual dimension of the Zohar, my job is only one, to transform the darkness into light and the bitterness into sweet, which means never, never waste a good crisis. When there is a crisis, a lot of people get reactive, anxious, upset, and they make many mistakes. And this is the opportunity for the ones who stay calm to buy what everybody dumps out, to take over what everybody's running away from, and so on and so forth. So it's your state of mind that determines your success. So let's go back to the issue of the Isha Ki Tazria. And here what the Zohar is teaching us, and I think I read it every year in the Parashat Ki Tazria, verse 9 in Zohar HaSulam of Ki Tazria. Isha Ki Tazria, Tanena Nisha Mazra Tchila Yoledet Zachar. Rabbi Yecha Amar HaTanena Dekutsha Bechu Gazar Alai Tipa. I Hu Dechar I Nukba. ואת אמרת, אישה מזרה, תחילה יולדת זכר. אמר רבי יוסי, ודאי קודשה בכו אבחין בין טיפה דוחה ובין טיפה דנוקבה. ובגיד דאבחין לגזר לי, היא להווה דחר ונוקבה. Translation and explanation. We learn, says, as it says in the Zohar, if the woman inseminates first, she will give birth to a boy, to a male. Okay. And I said it many times, not going to go into it again. We're not talking. What does it mean that a woman inseminates? Because if I want to have a baby boy, I should understand that. Don't go there. Okay? The answer is not there. The answer is, because there's a debate over here. Here, the Torah says that if it's a boy or a girl, you might understand that that depends all on the mother. And that's why for many, many generations, people believe that if a woman is giving birth only to baby girls, it's her fault. Okay. Then some, I don't know how many decades ago, but not too many, not too few, they discovered that it's not the woman who decides, it's the semen of the man. The woman's egg has always the X chromosome. So from the point of view of the mother, it doesn't matter. She has no control over if it's a boy or girl. In the male, the father, semen, there are two kinds of cells, okay? Sperm cells. Half of them carry the Y chromosome, half of them carry the X chromosome. If a Y-carrying sperm cell inseminates the egg, it will be a boy. Now it will have X and Y. If it is an X-carrying sperm cell that will inseminate the egg, it will be XX and that will be a female. That is the story, nothing else. Nothing to do with anything else. That's what determines a boy or a girl. Very simple. Very simple. That's why, you know, when people, women are giving birth, it's a boy or a girl. Very, very, very rarely, it's something that is not a boy and not a girl. It's a boy and a girl. Very rarely, the Talmud has a lot about it. How do you define? But that's a rarity. Human beings are born either boys or girls. That's most of the issues. Okay? Why? It's XY or XX. So simple. Nothing to do with any of anyone's opinion. You have XX, you're a girl, you have XY. Okay, you are a boy. Now, but here, the Zohar says, didn't we say that, that God determines if it's a boy or a girl? And here it says, no, it depends on the mother. Amar Rabbi Yossi, so Rabbi Yossi says, of course God can tell the difference between a drop of semen of a boy or a girl. Now we know, God knows exactly if it's an X or Y. If it's an X, it's going to be a male soul coming into that body because the body has XY. And if it's an XX, God knows to put in, that's exactly what the Zohar is saying. So the question is, Again, what will determine if it's a boy or a girl? Is it God's choice? And now the Zohar goes later on into verse 14, not just if it's a boy or a girl, what kind of a person it is, man or woman? What kind of a person? What about the quality of that person? You wanted a boy, you wanted a girl, but they came out as a headache. Okay? They can't take responsibility for themselves, they never mature. They have a lot of troubles and stuff like this. Is that what you wanted? What determines that? Do we have any influence about it? Is it only genetical? And by the way, if you understand a little bit of genetics, in a man's sperm, in one ejaculation, you can have millions and tens of millions and sometimes more of sperm cells. Each one of them is different genetically. There's a system of reshuffling all the genes when sperm cells and egg cells are being generated. They're not two are the same. Okay? Which one of them will inseminate the egg? Wow. And here the Zohar gives an answer. Verse 14.
וקודשה בריחו הפקיד לעילה ורוחה, כל מה דהפקיד והא וכמוה.
Translation. When a person is uniting, mating with his mate, now, if that person is arousing a holy desire, a holy will, then a Holy Spirit is being awakened. And that spirit is inclusive of a male and a female. And then God, according to the consciousness, and Rabbi Isaac Luria of the 16th century explained it in more details, it's not just the father, it's also the mother. At the moment of union, their state of mind is there's a moment that creates and generates a kind of a label, a spiritual note, label that has a very significant, distinct fingerprint. It is made of the thoughts, emotions, awareness of the couple in that moment. And what Rabbi Zakloria is explaining based on this Zohar, according to the state of mind of the parents, that metaphysical essence, which is a very significant, very, very precise, distinct fingerprint of a metaphysical frequency, it connects to a human soul that is in line to be born into a child. If their frequency that they generated on that important moment, crucial moment, fit any of the souls waiting to descend into a human body, that human soul, which means, as it says over here, the creator has his own angel that is responsible to match the metaphysical note that the couple created with
a human soul that is waiting to come down. If there is a match, there's a click, and that note will stay in or with the sperm cell and will make sure that that sperm cell, among millions of other sperm cells, will penetrate into the egg cell, fertilize it, and a new fetus will start to grow. Later on the 40th day later, 40th day later, a human body of a fetus will already have a pumping heart. Only then, the first part of that soul that was chosen will enter into the fetus 40 days after fertilization. Now, that, the Zohar says, that soul has already its own baggage. If it is a soul of a righteous person, a criminal person, depends what is the baggage of previous reincarnations that that soul is carrying into its coming lifetime. As Yored HaRuach, I'm reading the commentary verse 15, then that soul will come down v'tzelem echad imo, with a metaphysical image with it. This is that metaphysical image called tzelem, is connecting the metaphysical entity called a soul, or level of the soul, depends on the level of the soul that the parents drew in that moment. That tzelem is representing the metaphysical form. It cannot be determined by physical measurements. But whoever has a spiritual high level sight can see that tzelem. And as it says, ach betzelem italech ish. A person can walk around only if he has that tzelem, because that tzelem is that metaphysical structure that connects between the human soul and the human body. As long as that tzelem exists, the person will exist in this world. And when the tzelem leaves the person, then the person dies another place 30 days later. However, that two tzelem, two, which tzelem is also a shade, tzel, it's like the shades. It's kind of a reflection of the soul, but there are two of them. It's like connecting the body and the soul. You need two of them. One is closer to the body, one is closer to the soul. When they match, the soul and the body are matched together. By the way, the Zohar says that at the moment, the crucial moment, that the metaphysical spiritual note is being created by the parents, at that moment, that note is the tzelem that is holding on to the sperm cell. The Zohar says in another place, Parashat Vayichi, if there was somebody next to the couple, they're mating right now, and he has a spiritual eyesight, he would see that note as an image of the person that will be born when he's already mature. Which means we have over here an answer to many, many years of questions in science. We know that the fertilized egg is a one cell. It divides into two, and then it divides into four, and so on and so forth. But there's a whole enigma about that is only partially, small fraction is being understood, partially understood. How do all of these cells that are being generated by the cells dividing all the time in the fetus, how exactly they know how to create the intricate, complicated human body with so many cells, so many tissues, so many cells that differentiate into a very distinct cell that doesn't even look like, you know, the cell in your eye retina. It's a nervous system, okay? Do they look exactly like the cells in your fingernails? No. What about your blood cells? What about the white blood cells? Each one of them is physically structured differently, okay? All of them are coming from the original fertilized egg. How do they know? Not just to differentiate, which means to shut down most of their genes and allow only some of them to manifest. Okay? And how do they create the structure of the human being? And the Zohar says over here, it starts from a seed, one cell. However, the image of the grown-up person is there from the moment of the insemination, not fertilization. Fertilization can happen a few hours later. Sometimes if it's an artificial insemination, it can take days and years afterwards, okay? The moment is the life note, the cell, the cellen, the image of the person that is going to incarnate into that cell, it's there. So there is kind of an energy field that when the cells of the fetus multiply, 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 they grow and they differentiate according to the map that was put there, like it has its own distinct magnetic fields, supernatural fields. And one day science will find it. The field exists from the moment of insemination. The cells of the fertilized egg is are growing into that image that already exists from the beginning. They simply fill up the image, the cellum. When that cellum leaves for some reason, usually it's because when a person finishes job on earth, then there's no communication anymore between the physical body and the soul. The body wilts in 30 days. What is the question over here? What determines the physical note, the spiritual note that the parents create? Because what the Zohar is saying, if the parents' thought was pure and powerful, you will have a person with a pure and powerful nature. He will be spiritual. He will have less noise. He will be more focused and focused on good, and he'll have better chances to be successful. Which means what Azura is teaching us over here, and let's explain it even more. When we have the chance to create a child, and you know what, today it's very limited. You know, by average, how many children does a normal human being have?
One, two, three, four. By average, this is it for billions of human beings. So it's only eight times or four times in maybe one to four times in your lifetime by average. Depends on which society you're coming from, that you are responsible for that. But what the Zohar is saying also, when something happens to me, and I can choose saying, don't miss a good crisis. Something happened to me, it's a crisis. Grow. There's always something good will come out of it. Grow out of it. Use the opportunity and grow. If that is the case, if that is the case, you say at that moment, the Creator is only good. Whatever he brings in front of me is an opportunity. I'm an optimistic person. I have faith. I have morals. I really believe in the good. I really trust the good. I'm connected to a higher power. And therefore, I am totally focused on one thing, how to take what's placed in my plate and turn that into the greatest thing. How do I turn the darkness into light and the bitterness into sweet? If I do that, the moment I do that, I created my future. I chose a future that is going to be successful, full of light, full of good hope, full of flow of positive energy, because I put the seed at that moment of success. However, if I choose to badmouth the creation, saying, why would that happen to me? That shouldn't happen to me. I don't deserve it. It's not right. It's not fair. And I'm badmouthing another person, the reality, the creator, it doesn't matter. I'm badmouthing my bad luck. I'm badmouthing the moment I woke up in that morning. I'm basically into the mood of negativity and curse and anger and disdain and being a victim and all of that stuff. I, in that moment, put down a seed of negativity. From now on, it doesn't matter what I'm going to do. I'm going to follow the path that I chose. I chose a path of trials and tribulations, a path of a lot of pain and misery that I have to cleanse my own tzaraat, my own segiru, my own created path that I created by choosing to lock myself down in front of the essence of life that the Creator was putting in front of me. What I had to do just is to realize the negativity, the pain, the misery, the need to curse, the need to get upset, the need to be right, to simply not taking responsibility and blaming the whole world. I was supposed simply to look at it, stop the negativity, turn it into light with the power of faith. When we train ourselves through meditation daily, the science of neurotheology is proving we react more positively. When we react with negativity, it's not that overpowering. It's easier to watch it, calm it down, and be positive, be hopeful, being a believer in the good. That's basically the story of these parashot. So that's why when the parashot are talking about leprosy of a house, it's again the same story. The Zohar is saying in Parashat Metzora, verse 173, Jeremiah 22. Hoy to that person that is building his house without justice. What does it mean? When you put
the cornerstone. You have to say, the Zohar says, you have to put a cornerstone in the house and say with your mouth, this is the seed for a house that is going to be full only with light of the Creator. A house that is going to be built only for holy stuff. No place for something else. What if you didn't, you live in a house, you're not present when the cornerstone was put. So you have the Chanukat HaBayit, the dedication, or more true, education of the house. It's all about the thought you inject in the right moment. You have to exercise. That's why you'll find a link for meditation, exercise in that recording on YouTube. If you go down, find the link, please start exercise daily. So you don't fall into leprosy in a moment of pain, in a moment of tests and trial. You just find yourself, put yourself together, stop the negativity, remove the darkness, bring in the light, and choose the seed for the next stage of your life. This is the secret of real success. Thank you so much. Good luck for all of us.